This week, we regroup at the Cantina with special guest and friend of the pod, Jason, to discuss the newly released Star Wars trading card game, Star Wars Unlimited. After Jason outlines the basic gameplay and shares a few select cards with us, we dive into our review of Episode 5 of The Bad Batch, The Return. Fly responsibly.
Found the coordinates we're looking for, but we did find a cantina along the way. That means time for another round. Cantina Chronicles.
Whee!
Play the theme. Oh, wait, we did that.
That was played.
There's new, nice cantina, only a few giant worms underneath us.
Cantina Chronicles.
Yeah, we're back from worm riding. I think I'm the one who rode the worm this week, but that's not the big news. The big news is we're here with a special guest.
Hello.
One of our favorite friends of the pod, Jason, here tonight to do the pod with us. So exciting.
I'm sorry you're going to have zero views after those guys.
Well, you've got to get back. Well, the whole thing is you can get back and give us one, and then I'll give us one when I get home. And then, not that I mean, I'm at home, so I could probably just do it now. But it's nonetheless, the pod hasn't posted, so. other self-skin listen, hopefully.
Jason's our, we subscribe to OnlyFans, and that's Jason.
Just me, guys.
Our singular fan. But Jason, you're also a good buddy of ours. We're so happy to have you on the pod, man.
Thank you.
And super exciting stuff on the horizon for Star Wars.
Yeah.
And Fantasy Flight that we're going to get into, which is a new card game, Star Wars Unlimited. But first, I think we want to just like talk to you like we do all of our guests about Star Wars and what your overarching feelings are of Star Wars, where it is today, what you've liked in the last, few years.
Hit me with whatever you got.
Gosh, I wish we had our hyperspace.
Do you have a favorite series aside from Andor? Like, to make it a harder question, is there a favorite series of late for you?
They can't say Andor.
I can't say Andor.
Yeah,
you can. It's just to
spice it up a little bit.
All right. Besides Andor, which is peak television, let alone Star Wars. Besides Andor, I think it's probably still Mandalorian in terms of series. I had my qualms with Ahsoka, but I voiced those to Grant and Ben at work already, so. I can go over all of those again if you guys really want me to.
Qualms are allowed.
We know. We love all that stuff. We'll get into that organically. I think we talk about characters throughout the pod. But we did talk about Ahsoka quite a bit. That was fun to actually watch that and talk to you guys around the water cooler. Like, after each new episode, that was good stuff.
Definitely.
Are you looking forward to the movie? Are you looking forward to the Filoni film?
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm looking forward to all of the films. Primarily, I'm looking forward to Dawn of the Jedi.
Nice.
Like, all that big lore stuff is what really hits home for me.
Mm. Another lore guy. I mean, who doesn't love lore? That's what it's all about.
Right?
It's the backbone of the whole galaxy far, far away.
Yeah, definitely.
And it can be wild in the first one, too. It could be just like... Because it could be like nothing like what we've seen.
We got James Mangold. It's going to be special.
Yeah, I'm hoping for Logan era Mangold. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah,
I got it with Gilroy. I got like peak era Gilroy.
Yeah, no, that's very true. Yeah, what are you hoping for or wanting out of that movie? Do you think?
Honestly, I feel like. Are we talking about like the Mandalorian Grogu movie? Or are we talking about
The first Jedi. Yeah, we can do both actually. Okay. Yes.
All right. Because I'm going to ask you about Mandalorian because I also love that series. All right.
So I guess since Adam wants to start with Dawn of the Jedi, I want to see where they started to go wrong. Because I feel like they were birthed out of a need, considering like the history that we know of the galaxy. But I feel like what was needed at the time is not what needed to stay, which I know you guys have had this discussion about, you know, attachments and all that fun stuff. And I've actually brought this up with Ben and Grant in the past. So Adam, this is your first time hearing about it. I think the Jedi needed to pivot after the Sith went to the rule of two to be balanced and more like Mace was in terms of like having kind of like more of a balance in the Force as opposed to like tipping the scale to one side.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that take. That's interesting. I mean, yeah. I mean, Mace is one of those people that, you know, seemed to kind of get what was going on. He seemed to be,
except when he was like aware of it, like stiff arming Anakin from doing anything important. Like,
that's true.
I mean, yeah. I guess it's a fair assumption. Anakin's dangerous, and he's like, stay out of it. But that was Mace's original sin, I guess.
I mean, I will say everything seemed to be going fine with arresting the Chancellor until Anakin walked in. So like, so if Anakin listened to him.
It was a nice balmy evening in Coruscant.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. Yeah, he would have.
Mace was right.
If he had showed up with him, in my heart, I felt like if Mace showed that he trusted Anakin for a second, it would have gone different. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, no, he just would have done stupid stuff earlier, probably.
Right. It's interesting that you bring up the balancing act of the Force, Jason, because I have a feeling the Acolyte might speak to that to some degree when that show comes out, especially with sort of like where the Jedi go after the High Republic. Maybe they limit their numbers to 10,000 for the exact reason you're talking about, because I know we know that it's sort of like certified there's 10,000 Jedi.
I'm trying hard to get my hopes up for the Acolyte. Right?
Yeah.
But I can't help but get my hopes up for the Acolyte.
I know. I know.
But Dawn of the Jedi, I wonder what they'll speak to in that movie, given that it's going to be like the advent of the Force, the advent of the Jedi, maybe attachment, maybe the first dark side wielder. You know, maybe that's what that film gets into. I don't know. But then when we know the schism and sort of like where the Jedi truly go wrong and where the Sith are birthed, that happens like a bit later in the timeline, I think. Yeah. It's recorded. But it's interesting to see that, to how that balances out, and if it's just number of Force wielders or you know, influence in the galaxy, and what actually pertains to being out of balance. It's interesting stuff. So cool that you brought that up.
I
that first episode, like, I want it to be almost unrecognizable. I mean, I think it should be bonkers,
like a Terrence Malick film, or like almost like a Villeneuve film, where it's almost like it can be more elemental and sparse and sort of
like an A24 just like, I want something like wild, because I mean, I don't even think the like concepts of Jedi and Sith or even good and evil necessarily should come into play yet. Like, it's just it's an amalgam. The Force comes out and it's chaos. And it's like, I mean, sorting itself into good and evil, I think, would take probably 25 years. I don't know. I mean, unless it's just inherent to the people, and so you tell those stories. But like, I mean, and if anything, I feel like it should skew like bad first. Like, the worst people get it and they just like take advantage of it. And then, and like, slowly they have to be like, yo, like, we need to take great effort to make right decisions and have good.
This guy's calling him Darth now. He's calling himself Darth.
I think that's the nature of most people, though, is if you give them a power that they have that nobody else does, typically you feel like people in their nature will use it for evil things or to get what they want
before
they start being selfless and being defenders with it.
It's like an evolution of the mind that has to take place.
Yeah,
exactly.
I, I just had this thought of just like, I'm trying to keep it like, because I'm trying to be like, oh, you're all going to be so disappointed because it still has to be like a Christmas, like four quadrant movie. But like,
I don't think so. I think post-Dune, it can actually challenge norms. I'm hoping more sci-fi films challenge norms more than sort of create what's right. tried and true for the brand.
Yeah, it's very true. Like the like I think I have an old view of like what's a blockbuster now, and like this year with like Barbie and Oppenheimer and now Dune 2, it's just like maybe they've discovered it's a little, you can do a little more with your movie. But so part of me is wondering if like, so Star Wars loves their twins, right? And like Star Wars birthed out of a twin story, even though it wasn't, it was decided that way between episodes 5 and 6, but we'll pretend that was the plan all along. But like, what if you tell a Cain and Abel story with like a twin, right? With dark side, light side, right?
Right. They did do that in the Old Republic video game, the MMO.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's actually to great detail, which is they do twins at one point and one. They're both basically dark siders, but it's still an interesting story, and I would love to see that maybe in a new shape and form with a Dawn of the Jedi mm-hmm. film or something where it almost embodies that that sort of symbol or that relief we see on the ground in The Last Jedi, that sort of monk, that's the duality almost, like something like that would be very interesting.
I like the idea of starting dark, right? Like what if they're both drifting to the dark and it's a redemption story, like, right? Like this one of them is redeemed. It brings himself back from the dark to discover the light. Like, well, I love the idea of discovering the light instead of it being the natural order of things.
I mean,
yeah,
it'd almost be weirder if everyone went to the light and then they realized like something was wrong. Like,
I hope they don't go that direction just because it's boring.
It's kind of boring. And, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. There's a lot more license there. It should be pretty badass to see. I want to know what nerds are working with Mangold. Like, is he using the like handed to him stock nerds, which is like the Storyboard Group and I guess new chief creative officer, Dave Filoni, or does he have a bespoke nerd?
Bespoke,
you know, like a friend that was like, or was is this guy know like about Zeltrons? Like, does he like, does Mangold like know what's up?
Zeltrons. Does he say AT-AT or AT-AT?
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Is he reading the High Republic right now? Like, I don't know.
Right,
he says he's in on Star Wars. How deep in?
He could be. I mean, right? He's of a certain age. Like,
I almost feel like the Dawn of the Jedi film doesn't need to be so informed by what's come before in Star Wars. I feel like what it can do is sort of be a religious almost text for the Force and sort of what it means to be selfish and what it means to be selfless, right? And like two different characters, and then maybe even the character that's selfless the entire time has to destroy the selfish person and then bury it and hide it so like the Jedi can exist or something.
I agree. You
know, like maybe that's the story in a lot of ways. It's like there is a body under that temple, you know what I mean? Like there's something to that that's kind of interesting, where there's the sort of the sacrificing for the institution.
I totally agree. I think it should be more of a morality tale about escaping the norm, so to speak, where, you know, human nature or just nature in general for intelligent beings is, like I mentioned, if you have a power, you use it to get what you want. And somebody needs to rise up and realize that, hey, you can't do it at the expense of other people.
I love that.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be one of the original stories, right? Like it should, if it's going to follow, you know, religion, it's got to follow one of the original sort of like founding stories of like, I don't know, right? I've got it. Is that the path, the easiest path to go? Or do you think it's easier to just like make something out of whole cloth?
I think it can be like kind of a meta-textual borrowing of many religious.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Of, yeah. Right.
Early.
You want the overlap.
There's a lot of Venn overlap.
Yeah. All the Abrahamic religions, like all, you could look at everything, you know, and compound it all and kind of figure out what's compelling about these early human stories, the Greek tragedies, all that stuff.
I mean, it's just Campbellian, right? Yeah. Like Campbell just looked at everything. Like, what's the intersection of all of these religions? And,
right,
and
right texts, at their beginning, right?
even Native like, American.
That's the fun part. Stories.
And maybe that's what you do, right? Like, maybe if you're studying, you study all religions, all all moral tales and like try to look for what's the original entry point of that. But man, it's part of me thinking like, is maybe episode 9 was the hardest one to make, you know, because I you have to wrap up the entire Skywalker saga. So much, it's so difficult. They're like, oh, we're gonna do episode 10, but not call it episode 10 because maybe we try again.
Yeah.
But is this the hardest Star Wars movie ever to make? Like, part of me is like, you could not pay me enough
to do the first one. I think it's the easiest one.
Really? Okay. Why do you think?
Because I think it can be so abstract. It really doesn't need. It shouldn't follow most of the rules. You know what I mean? Like, if you could ever have an out of place Star Wars, like I almost don't want it to be, you know, like the same camera wipes and the same establishing shots.
Yeah,
like,
that's fair.
I kind of want it to feel really different, right? Like, this is the first one. This is the kind of the most important one.
It can literally, there can be a bunch of sort of like insert shots of just geography and like babbling brooks and like trees. Like, I don't really need so much in this movie. It can be
interesting. I think that's just kind of the movies I'm watching right now. I love them, but.
Take it down.
I know.
They're like, no one went to see our Dune movie. Yeah.
Lower. But what I'll say is like, it's so interesting they went with Mangold, right? Because like Logan, it was like Mangold's like, I'm totally going to like reinvent the superhero.
Which is kind of what I'm looking for.
Which is good, but you could get Dial of Destiny Mangold. And I'm actually a Dial of Destiny. So here's
apologist.
I am a Dial of Destiny apologist. I just want to make that clear.
I enjoyed that movie, all 4 hours of it.
It's a good movie if you're in your 80s.
Or if you don't go to a lot of movies post-pandemic and have a three-year-old, you're like, this is the best thing ever because I'm like away and watching a movie and like show me whatever and I think it's the best thing. But all seriousness, like the issue with that movie, or not the issue with the movie, but the issue of the movie compared to like what we're talking about now is like he was trying to ape the other movies, right? So that's so there's the danger of that.
He was trying to tip his hat to the other movies, and it had been so long.
Yeah,
I felt like the Mormon nostalgia, the better. Like he leaned into it, but I wasn't hit over the head with it. I just thought it felt like an original movie, which was And that's why I don't understand why people don't really love it. I mean, it felt like an Indiana Jones movie. Like, what do you want?
It's a sequel to Temple of Doom, which is my favorite Indiana Jones movie. Anyway, moving on. We don't have to reopen that.
Yeah. No, I didn't really like the relic, and I didn't like any really of the relic storyline and what it took to get to the relic and what the relic meant, and without spoiling the movie, sort of where they went in regards to the relic.
No, great. You've got notes. That's what I love about you.
I was like falling asleep. It was bad.
Awesome. All right.
I can think of like 10 more.
So the Mandalorian and Grogu movie, what I'm expecting from that.
Thank you for reading my mind, Jason. Someone's paying attention here.
So like we have two people against back on track.
Sun is shining. Jason's here. All right. So Mandalorian Grogu film.
So my expectations of that is more like almost like the first Iron Man movie where they made it expecting it to not do anything and it was just a big fun romp. I expect a three-act Mando Grogu just having fun movie for that, because we know we're getting season 4 at some point, and we know eventually we're going to get the culmination of everything in the Mandoverse. So why not have a fun movie just to bring people to the theater and
have fun. Enjoy the Mandalorian and Grogu experience?
Yeah. Exactly.
Give me spectacle.
I love that.
Jason, I'm 100% there with you. Like, that's kind of what I want. It's just a standalone story, fun 90-minute to 2-hour adventure story, like just especially because it's the first one coming back, right? That seems like it's gonna be first one back. Like, just remind us what a Star Wars is, right? Like, just
And hearing the Mandalorian death whistle when he just flies by in the N1, just in the theater, like hearing that after taking out like 3 pirates, like that's gonna be so exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
What I'm worried about with that, not that it's worried, is like. So this is going to be a 90s reference for our 90s kids. Like, I remember seeing the X-Files. I think it was between season 4 and 5. They did the X-Files movie. And I remember going to see that movie, which was like, I remember like, this is giant. It's big budget. They said the S word. Like, they could swear.
That was a big thing in the 80s and 90s.
I know. It was like, whatever. And I remember watching that going, this is amazing. And then like season five started and I'm like expecting like a continuation of this thing. I'm like, oh, their budget dropped. like just being disappointed. So there's that expectation of like, when we come back to season four to just be like, oh yeah, there's a lot of volume here going on. Right. So there's like that balancing act you got to do with that. But
I got to say, yeah, I mean, it's got its own vibe, but I didn't feel the volume when on my last rewatch. Like I just was like in on the story still. Like, I know it's there, and I guess if I'm really looking for it, I'll see it. But like, if you're just following the story, it's like, I mean, it's better than like painted backgrounds, which were some of the best parts of the original trilogy. So it's like, I'm all right.
Yeah, it's an amazing technology. Yeah. It just shows itself sometimes.
Yeah, there's a rock, there's a pile of trash, there's some greeblies, and then there's the wall.
And there's the wall. Yeah.
Sonking at a specific pace where you're just like, oh, this is just to fill time.
Yeah, you've got exact 50 paces and we need to time it out. Yeah.
I also feel like part of it is because we're nerds and we follow the production of it, we're aware of it, so we're looking for it. Like when you talk to people about like Moff Tarkin in Grand Moff Tarkin in Rogue One,
at some point.
Most people, right? I'm like, I know, I kept giving him promotions because I'm like, where was he in
rank? He was still Grand Moff, Clone Wars too, but I think he was higher than was general.
Prison warden, or whatever he was,
right? But when you watch that movie, like I look for the seams, and same thing with like Leia in Episode 9. But I think like most people who aren't paying attention to that are like not gonna notice the seams. So I'm like, is that a them problem or a me problem? And when I ask that question, when I have to ask that question, I'm always like, it's a me problem. If I have to ask that question, it's a me problem. Here's a real technical question. Has anyone bought the physical Blu-ray 4K Mando, like Star Wars series?
No.
So next time I go to my giant big box store, which I will not name, I keep meaning to buy those. And I'm wondering when I throw those in, because like, you know, when you're streaming, you're getting like kind of 4K, but not quite because of streaming capabilities. And I'm hesitant to buy those and throw those up on my giant 4K television because I'm really nervous that I'm going to really see the scenes.
Now you have to do it, Adam, because now I'm curious. You know, I've never for a millisecond thought to buy like 4K versions of this because I'm like, I'm paying $7 a month. That's what I'm going to get. And I'm like, but now that you're saying it, like it could be ridiculously good.
I am going to buy them, but I just mean to, I am starting to go back to physical media because of like things like Willow or anything else taught me. Not that Willow was great, but like things
I was the one person who enjoyed
it. I actually really enjoyed it. I liked it too. But like, again, my point is that like things disappear. And you
these kids are speaking very correctly and modern way. It's like this
a reminder, like if you buy movies on any of these services, they can still take them away from you. Like if you buy movies on Amazon,
we don't own anything.
Like, sorry, we don't have the user agreement anymore. So like I am trying to get back to physical media for like the things that are really important to me. And
just as they stop selling physical media everywhere. Just as they've stopped selling.
Well, like some big box stores, you can still.
Yeah, I bet they're out there. I hear rumors. Okay, we brought Jason here for the thinly veiled excuse for him to explain this new game that came out. And we don't talk a lot about tabletop Star Wars games, and we should. And I'm excited about this one. We got Outer Rim in the background there of Adam, which
we'll eventually all get together and play.
Yeah, it was so fun. Mm-hmm. Jason, tell us about this game, please.
Sure. So, Fantasy Flight Games is the publisher for the game. They actually made Outer Rim, that's back there behind Adam.
Nice.
They have a lot of actual Star Wars IP. Empire versus Rebellion. Scrolling through their list here. Rebellion itself. Imperial Assault. Their most recent one before Unlimited is the Star Wars deck building game, which is also pretty highly rated. You know, they've been around for a long time. And honestly, I went to the pre-release for this this past weekend, and it's one of the more fun card games that I've ever played, collectible card games, because most card games have that Magic the Gathering / Pokemon / Yu-Gi-Oh! Feel where it's like, all right, so I'm going to take 5 minutes to do my first turn. I'm going to go grab a water and, you know, a snack, come back, and then you take your turn after that. And this game is you start with a leader, you start with a base, and you start with two resources. And from that point, it's I go, you go, I go, you go, until everything is exhausted. You draw back up, and then you restart until you destroy the opponent's base. It's a lot more fast paced, very strategic, because you have to manage ground units and space units. It's a lot of fun.
That's so cool. And you can upgrade these units too. Like if you if there's a ground unit, you throw down Leia and you want to upgrade her to be a badass, she can basically survive longer and take more people out, right?
Yeah, there are there are like a limited number of upgrades right now, but you can eventually also like activate your leader. So like as an example, for anyone who happens to be on YouTube here, this is one of the cool hyperspace leaders. This is Sabine. It's backwards.
No, it's nice. Perfect.
No,
dude, it's high res.
Yeah, it's high res. It's great. It's good stuff
so
right there.
This is
better than we made.
A hyperspace card, so it's like actually borderless. So you see like the hyperspace effect around it. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the cool art features. Okay. And then you play with them in this position for the majority of the game. And then when you reach their epic action, once you have enough resources, you can flip them.
Okay.
And they become a unit that you can go to town against your opponent with.
Nice.
And that the health level right is the blue. Or I guess like, and then the attack is on the left.
Okay. Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. It's definitely I can see the connection with Outer Rim.
Yeah.
Right. It's not identical, but in terms of like and just something about it, I'm just like, oh yeah, this is totally the same company that that created that. And as a person who kid of the 90s, our nerddom was not where I grew up, was not, this is pre-internet, was not D&D, it was Magic the Gathering, and I spent so much of my money looking at a liquor store. Again, I'm like, could this sentence be any more 90s? I spent so much money working at the record store that I worked at. And then it would go to my local community college and Magic the Gathering nights. Oh, God.
There was a Star Wars card game way back when.
Too. Destiny. They actually did Destiny beforehand. Yeah.
Very old card game. Great stuff.
Yeah.
I saw a Death Star card, like an orbital assault or something, where it was like destroys all units on the field.
Yeah.
Does that just own units as well? Like other.
It would be all units on the field, yeah. So yours too. So
there's some really too. Fun cards in this game. Yeah. I'm excited.
Shit is real.
It's a lot of fun. This first set is called Spark of Rebellion, so it goes basically from Rebels through Return of the Jedi.
This is my favorite starting point for any Star Wars conflict. It's basically Luke from Empire Strikes Back and Vader from Empire Strikes Back. And Luke is a little weaker from what I can see from the card. Like the attack is a little lower, I think. Is the health lower too?
So the leader Luke is kind of like average, but there is like a legendary Luke and a legendary Vader that are more powerful, but they're also expensive. But there are some deep cuts in here.
Like
for the first set, like even like the ones I pulled, like Bib Fortuna.
Sweet.
I pulled a Benthic Tutu.
Yes.
Incredible. Nice.
I mean, I think that's a cornerstone of a great team right there.
You said this one's Rebels to Empire.
Rebels to Return.
Rebels to Return, I believe. Rebels to Return. So here's good old Benthic Two Tubes.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
My man.
Fifth Brother is in here.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
So there's like a lot of cool, a lot of deep cuts. You can run Wampas on your team if you want to.
Just the Wampa meta. Three Wampas straight on the field.
Listen, if you've got a Wampa, you use them.
Yeah.
And so cards come out exhausted, and then you have to, they basically become readied, and then they can
in between turns. Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. The next two confirmed sets are going to be called Shadows of the Galaxy,
all right,
and Twilight of the Republic.
Twilight of the Twilight.
So that's going to be a prequel. Okay, one. So that's going to be
Is the second one
so excited?
And when do those
Shadows of the Galaxy sounds awesome?
Shadows of the Galaxy. Is that going to? What is that going to be?
So here's very.
Sorry, I just want to explore that for a second.
That might be more of like the original trilogy kind of stuff, because there's definitely a bunch of stuff that's not in here. I'm sure they would want to put different versions in for different colors.
Could that be like a Bounty Hunters or an Underworld?
It could be. There is some Underworld here. Like there's some Bounty Hunter cards in the first set. Yeah. There's like Boba's one of the leaders that you can build your deck around.
We might get Palpatine, right, in Shadows of the Galaxy as a major hero cards.
Palpatine. There is a Palpatine leader, actually. Yeah. I didn't pull the fancy one. I have a good friend of mine who pulled the hyperspace one, so here's the normal Palps.
Nice.
Oh, wow. Is there a backside to that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Excellent.
10 health. Oh, my goodness. All right.
Yeah, you basically get to damage all your own units and then...
Oh, wow.
Wreak havoc on people.
Very cool. I'm excited to play.
Chopper for you guys.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
Yeah, so...
I can't imagine he's fantastic to use in a deck. It's probably like, destroys several of your own units.
Benthic, the Emperor, and Chopper, I feel like you could do some serious damage with that.
Oh, yeah.
I would love a Benthic and Chopper sort of team up. Yeah.
I'm clicking on some of these because I found it, but I love that the Obi-Wan Kenobi card is from basically like 2 minutes before his death.
Sick pose, though, right?
The picture they choose, and I'm like, it's sick pose. I'm like, is his power one? Never mind.
It's right before he becomes more just powerful made than you could ever imagine.
Thanks. Yeah, sure. So a couple of like, I know.
Anybody? I thought that was gold.
I'm now questioning. No, it was great, but I'm now questioning the quote. But I'm not going to do that live.
Right, of course.
Yeah, this is going to be a problem for me. I'm just kind of scrolling through. So, the two questions, which are real, like, this is like, how much money is this going to cost, Adam? Question. one is, so how, when are the expansions, how often do they release like new?
It'd probably be like Magic or Pokemon, right? Where it's like every couple months, 3 months, maybe.
I would imagine it's every three or four months.
Every quarter.
I'm not sure if they've announced how often they're going to release them.
That's fair. But
it becomes very addictive, and I've already spent too much money.
I have good news and bad news for you, Adam. The good news is the packs are 16 cards, which is larger than most other card games, and they're the normal price. Yeah, they're like $5 for a pack of cards. Bad news is there are 252 collectible cards in the first set.
So that was the question I was going to ask. I was like, how many are in the first set? All right. But I will say that 250 whatever number is based on variance, right? Like the hyperspace.
Yeah.
Or
is there anything more rare than the hyperspace cards? Is there? There's like these chase cards, right? They're like one in every 12 boxes or something.
They're showcase cards, and they're just for the leaders.
I thought it was. You know what's so smart about this card game is they put a bunch of super deep cut cards in the first set here, where it's like. It just feels like some of the action cards and some of the units are just like not units you'd think they'd put out in a sort of first set where it might just be a lot of the canon characters and sort of like the ensemble and all those. It's like, no, it's like, you know, it's like Admiral like Tag. Is
Admiral
it?
Tag.
Like, Admiral Childrens is in it. I was like, who is this guy? I was like, who are these people? Like, and then like, there's crazy ships in this first set. And I was like, okay, this is just a great thing to collect because then it's like your own personal data bank, basically, around.
You can get Mining Guild TIE Fighters, which was...
I was surprised.
There's like an ad hoc spaceship or something like that, Starfighter or something, where it's like a custom Starfighter. And it's like, this ship doesn't even exist in the galaxy. So there's also what feels like custom art and custom, like new concepts sort of explored in the card game too, which is... it's very enticing. Like, I will be collecting these for at least these first three sets. Who knows if I'll stick around? We'll see what.
Yeah, you got to play happens. It a few times. Yeah. See how it goes. Yeah.
No, it already looks fun. I watched the demo of how it was done, and I was like, this already looks great. Putting your base and your hero down right away, and just establishing kind of the theme of your deck is something interesting to me, because I really can't stand card games where you just have a mystery deck and there's really no feel to what you're playing until you start playing the cards, and it's like, oh, that's what this deck is, it's revealed to be this sort of element deck or something. And then I like this game, so it's like, here's my base and here's my hero. You can kind of maybe guess what cards I might have in here, but based on the themes I'm going for. But who knows, I could, you know, you could theoretically stack Imperial cards in a rebel deck, right?
Like rebel. Yeah, because the cool thing about this is you could technically play any card in any deck. There's just an aspect penalty. So, like, if the card doesn't share an aspect with either your leader or your base, you just have to pay an extra 2 resources for each aspect that doesn't match.
Hmm. Oh, that's actually cool. So it makes you stick with your theme a little bit.
Yeah, makes you stick with your theme a little bit. That. But if you find something that's like... That's right neat. Up your alley that is just a little more expensive for you to play, you can still do it.
It's worth the penalty. That just reminds me of Ben's complaint about Battlefront, right? Like, this seems right up your alley.
Ben's like, all like,
you're rewarded for staying in theme or in
I've forgotten. I've already suppressed all of my Battlefront 2 like grievances. Let's leave them there.
Put it that way.
Yeah, we talked about, they already choked on their last project. We talked about that last week. Yeah, for heaven's sake.
The other question I have about the game is, I'm kind of clicking through. I found I'm on the website looking at all the different cards. And is the art, do we know if the art's original?
Yes.
It looks original. Like, these don't look like they're from comics, right? Cool. They're from,
the art is original. If you look on the bottom left, since you're looking at the cards, there's a name down there. That's the illustrator for each card.
Oh, yeah. They actually credit. That's awesome. Good.
I'd love to see that list. I mean, I imagine some of the comic people were used for that.
I'm just randomly clicking. I'm not recognizing the names.
Yeah,
which is
even
which
better,
is a
right?
Good
they brought
thing.
In some new talent.
More people. Yeah. They're really
That's
great.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
I want to get a game. Yeah. That sounds like a blast.
Are all the rebels in there? Is Kanan and Zeb in there? I know I saw Ezra.
Kanan is. Kanan. Sabine is. Hera's a leader. I honestly haven't seen Zeb.
So if you want to collect rebels, maybe this is the only set in which you could do that, right?
There could be more. I'm willing to bet. You know how often card games retread the same kind of area just to...
Yeah.
That's
interesting. Have different art. Make it... Because you also have to consider it's more of a collector's card game, too. So, like, they want people to... keep coming back and buying more packs and doing stuff. So
a question from a noob. So, like, when the new pack comes out next, will you be able to use these cards with those cards? Or
yes.
Oh, okay. I see. There we go. That's what you're talking about, Grant. That'd be pretty dope.
Yeah.
Another question, just so like you said, like leaders, can you give us what kind of leaders did you get? Like what's the breadth of like what you could get as leaders?
So, there are Director Krennic. I'll read through the leaders. Director Krennic, Aiden Versio, Chewie is a leader, Kiru Imwe, Luke, of course, Palpatine, Grand Marf Tarkin, Hera, Leia, Vader, Grand Inquisitor, IG-88, Cassian Andor, Sabine Wren, Boba Fett, Grand Admiral Thrawn, Han Solo, and Jyn Erso are all of the first
IG-88 is a leader.
I don't know if I'd follow an IG-88. It's just like a chaos storm of bullets or pew-pews.
Oh, I'm gonna read that card. I bet that card does something crazy.
That's rad, man. That's rad.
Oh, I found Zeb, by the way. Cool. Zeb is in there.
I'm definitely going to collect all the rebels and
So it looks like, yeah, they have all the Rebels.
So
yeah.
There's a Kanan card too. Did you guys just say this? Wow.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep.
Rad, man.
I can't wait. I'm excited. It comes out tomorrow. Friday. March 8th.
Yeah, it's out March 8th. In local game stores. I don't know if they're going to put it in major stores or not. I'd imagine they would at some point, but
I'll let you know tomorrow, because tomorrow is a stay-at-home day for my daughter, which means we're going to a big box store for to do some shopping, because, boy, at 9 a.m. does that kill some time? So I'll wander by the card. The card. That's, I know exactly where the card section is. I'll wander by and let you know if there's any.
Research.
And maybe I'll buy a box.
Yeah. Yep. And the starter set is pretty nice, right? It comes with two decks.
Oh, yeah. Instantly
play with a friend.
They're doing two-player starter sets. So it comes with a Vader and a Luke deck. Already pre-assembled, which is really nice. That way you don't have to find a friend and convince them to play. You can be like, here, take this deck and just try
have
it.
The deck. Yeah. And it gives you two play mats that connect, basically.
Yep.
Yeah, that's cool. So starter set's a good place to begin. Right. Speaking of begin, we should probably begin our coverage.
Bad Batch.
Episode 5, The Return. Did we all watch?
You know, week? I watched it like an hour ago for the first time. I'm usually just like, I
Same.
Wake up and watch. I'm Same. All excited yeah, for it, yeah. but just wild week, you know?
Oh, yep. No doubt. This was, I mean, you know, just the tensions are rising in the batch because Crosshair has returned to the team, and now they're returning to the world that Crosshair was stationed on and sort of made his heel turn, or actually, you know, learned the Empire's true, like, tyrannical sort of nature, and killed that officer, and he comes clean with Hunter in this episode. It's pretty good stuff, pretty compelling drama. It was a fun episode. It was good stuff, but interesting to return to a planet we've been to. We visited in the previous season.
Barton was kind of interesting. Is the name of the planet?
Yes.
Right. Yeah, we saw it in the Outposts in season 2, episode 12, right? We can see him like with the helmet of Commander Mayday, and Hex and Beach. Right. There was a nice little nod back to that episode where he puts the helmets up to respect it in the same way that Commander Mayday did back in that other episode. Great callbacks. I was really pleased that they like played out this sort of like, at least for a full episode, of Crosshair sort of winning the respect of the rest of the batch. I mean, I love Wrecker. He's just such a softy. He's like, I kept your stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I loved that.
It's
also like, it's not like winning the respect. It's really just winning the respect of Hunter. That's it. Cause like Wrecker's just like,
I'm in. Yeah. And he's like, I kept your stuff because I always hoped you'd come back anyways. Here you go. Like, Wrecker's, I love that he's such a softy. That's pretty great. But yeah, they played it out, and you know, they had to dramatize it, and it's like, you're not part of the group until you save someone's life. Okay, you're in. You know, that was 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Jason, what'd you think about this app?
I honestly enjoyed it. It feels to me, and I guess I have this issue with just animation in general, when there's like 30-minute episodes, it felt like everything just fell into place a little too perfectly.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
Speaking of falling into place perfectly, Ben, what did you think of the violins? The like somber violins playing at the end.
The score in this episode.
Because you were really going after the score last episode.
I know. I feel like this is going to be a season.
Actually, I thought the violins were right, playing on the heartstrings.
Can I tell you, this is going to be a season of trying to convince Ben that
the music is good. The music
trying
is good,
not to let people know my real feelings about this stuff. No, I honestly, and this is a knock against me, not the Kiner team, I didn't hear a note of music. I can recall a single note of music for you for what happened in that episode. I was following the
so sad in this episode.
Yeah,
it was all like the tributary, you know, the tributes to the Mayday and all that stuff. It was just the sad violins playing at the end.
I'm with you, Ben. Turn the volume up on.
I'd have to turn it up on everything because it mix it so well. And it's like give the guy a chance. They don't let him like really articulate. I mean, I think there's a reason I don't remember a single note of music. It's because it's like dying in my sleep. I don't feel it. I just like give me something to think about. Come on.
Watch this episode.
I'm just so happy Ben's negative about something.
Yeah, Ben, you've never been negative about anything ever.
I've been feeling some kind of way this week. I apologize.
Well, the end of the episode, the violins are really just, you know, in full crescendo at the end.
They should be. It's an emotional part. But like, tell me a story.
You can say they're tugging the heartstrings.
This guy.
They really are.
Yeah, no, I mean, I want to hear a theme. Like, give me something bold. Like, I want to, like, have it could mean more in another dimension if you're like, okay, this is the themes of Hunter.
I promise you there's a theme in this episode. And it's like the sad, sort of, you know, wary clone theme.
Yeah.
I don't know what you'd attribute it to, but it's there. And it's been following, I think. Whenever there's a tragedy with the batch, it's this. I think it's been reoccurring. I'm pretty sure.
I mean, I think Crosshair is emblematic of the tragedy of the clones, right? Like he's like trying to hold on to what he is, which is a fighter, and he's like
good soldier,
yeah, a good soldier, right? Like even to cross teams and stick with the Empire because he's like that's what I am. I'm a soldier, you know, and then. You know, obviously that's crumbling away beneath his feet. He can't, you know, he's not a marksman anymore. He's losing the fabric of who, you know, he is as a person, which is like, I'm a killer. That's what I do. You know, I think that's the real reason why he left the Bad Batch was because he just couldn't be who he is, which is just, he's a killer. Like that's the only thing he's been programmed for his whole like life.
I did like that he fell right back into lockstep with the batch in this episode. And Hunter's like ice worm within 100 meters and whatever. Yeah. And then he just spins around, starts just firing his sniper rifle. I was just like, this is what you want. You want Hunter to kind of go over comms and talk to Tech or Crosshair and sort of strategically plan out an attack. It's kind of like what's fun about the Bad Batch, but when Crosshair's missing and now Tech's gone, it's like you need either Tech or Crosshair in the mix. Because Hunter is a sort of tactician. And who's he going to relay tactics to if you don't have a Crosshair or a Tech, essentially?
I agree. And it's weird to me. I mean, we'll talk. We'll see. We'll see when Tech returns.
That's who the Emperor was looking at. He's like, yes, keep.
Yeah, it's just
he'll be an evil Tech.
All joking aside, it's yeah, it just feels like you need all four of them. I guess they're trying to do it with Echo, but like it's not quite the same.
Dude, I love Echo.
Like they're missing an element
around my Echo.
No, Echo. Echo is great.
The breaker.
They missed out on that. I was dying for that to happen, but. It did.
You need a Tech there, right? Like there's just not a Tech.
You have to get to the breaker room.
I mean, I feel bad.
Can you hear me? Can you get to the breaker room? I was like, just say Wrecker, get to the breaker. Ricka. Just say
it, yeah. It's like Pack the Cat, having yet. It's like, Ricka, get to the bricket.
Yeah.
I needed.
With the batch.
Betcha.
Betcha. Yeah.
Breakers and Ricka.
We're all friends. So a couple of things to build off of last week. You have Crosshair, one, notice him petting. Batcher.
Oh, I was like,
Batcher you're gonna come with a Crosshair like action figure?
Yep,
which they've been through the poodoo
again. They have, and not to get to like talking about my area of whatever, but like one of the most successful programs in prisons is having inmates train seeing eye dogs and other things, pit bulls.
It's like rehabilitation,
pit bulls. Yeah, it really helps. So I like that they're doing that. The other thing is I'm really starting to buy into my theory that his shakes are psychosomatic because they keep popping up when he's talking about at the worst time and when he's talking about his past things. I want to build on what Jason said, though, because I feel like I see where you're coming from with this idea of like it kind of resolves a little too easily because like the whole premise of this. OK, this episode's fine. It's fine. It's good. It's whatever. But it's a bridger. It's bridging. Right. It's bridging episodes. It's like we're getting to the point of the game. Hey, I know. I was like, I said it. I'm like, oh, crap. I said that. And now they're gonna
just one obligatory pet.
But like here's the thing, it's like it builds off of the thing we've talked about before, one of my least favorite conceits, which is like if two people just talk, but they did like make that like out loud, which is like it's fine. Then they talk. Here's my thing. Okay. The whole thing is like talk, 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 and then they say like three things. at the end of the episode. And I'm like, if this was not a cartoon, you might have had a longer conversation then. I thought the Empire was good. I was wrong. I did some things. We're good. And I'm like, no, you're not good. Sorry. Like, yeah. It just felt a little too, like, it was like,
have you guys not watched, like, a little too easy, but I get it. Easy for it? Like, did you want a clone force of poets? These guys are warriors. They're men of few words. I think
it merited at least, like, a 2-minute conversation, not like a 30
exactly.
second conversation.
Like, no. With that. Yeah. Like, with a that. Little more. A little more. I know you are. But I'm,
you get it. Yeah. It's fine. I'm like, they're good.
Unless,
they're bros.
Unless. Oh, God, no.
they're not plows bros, yeah, but they're bros.
Yeah, but even bros get in each other's faces.
Yeah.
From time to time. This was very much like, okay, I heard you. Cool. We're all right now.
I mean, after he saved his life and Hunter did get in his face, then he pushed him, shoved him. One time.
Look at that. The guy who carries a hunting knife around constantly and having his face tattooed. Shoved a dude. Yeah. Oh no.
I think the only thing that really would enhance the episode for me is if you saw like a sort of a flashback to him killing the officer again and talking about the betrayal and essentially a double cross. And then betrayal was the major theme. But I agree with you guys. I think they could have maybe heightened the drama around that. Like his shaky hands connected to this betrayal, not betrayal, but ultimately this justice that he, you know. Perpetrated to take out that officer and escape. It's like that's what everything maybe is connected to in that moment, and they don't really zoom in on that.
No, they're really expecting you to remember a lot from a while ago. Okay, you know what? Here's like my big critique hat on. I just gotta be honest. So like they did the thing at the beginning of this episode that I kind of hate that they do in TV shows, which is like the end of the last episode was just like, I had help. And they show Crosshair there. And then this episode starts fast forwarding because.
Yeah, I thought they would pick it up right there, too.
Yeah, okay. Because they kind of wrote themselves into a part that's really hard to write themselves out of. Right. I'm just like, that's where the drama is. The drama is like. Because
even in a bad action movie,
Crosshair immediately after that.
Even in a bad action movie, it would be like the Rambo character or Hunter would like immediately draw his firearm and sort of take all of Crosshair's weapons away from him, like and throw him in like you know a sort of space containment room.
Well, I thought this was a nice alternate to that. I was like, okay, like they're just like, no, this is going to be a long drawn out thing, and. Because the bottom line is they all had to get off there. They all had to get off the planet. Like they were being chased still. So they needed to like get out. So it was like, it could have actually been not really exciting drama that happened. It's like, get on the ship, let's go. And then, you know, whatever. But I agree. Like it's a massive.
And then that, in that tiny ship, they just sit there. And stare. Like this is the thing where it's like people like in TV shows, like they have a conversation. It skips 4 hours later and then they continue the conversation as they walk into another room. It's just like as
we also don't get clarification four, like how long they've already been back.
Yeah.
Like how long does it take for Echo to get there and for the mission to quote unquote start anyway?
Right.
Has it been a couple days?
Has it
been like a few hours? Yeah. Exactly. How are they not having that conversation at some point?
Yeah.
Right, because Crosshair's doing like target practice on the beach.
And he's done it enough times.
He's been
that,
doing it.
That the
PZI, that
his accuracy is decreasing.
His average is getting worse.
Average.
Yeah.
No, it's like it's one of those things that just like I get it, but I was just like I saw the seams of the writing there a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been more. I was really expecting them to just pick up right there, you know, and have it out. That would have been exciting.
Yeah,
you know,
I almost even would have appreciated it, or like it's like a head nod to each other, walk into the ship, and like not talking, like even just
they could have done that at the end of
each other
where they because they have like, the emotional high.
Because like they're manly men and they don't talk about it, and you have Omega just going, guys, you need to talk. Like you know, like even that, but to be like, we have to put it together. They literally just didn't say anything.
I think like a physical altercation could have been interesting for those two characters because it would have immediately sort of heightened the stakes of it all.
Even with Wrecker breaking
Omega
it up,
could have gone to it. Like, Omega could have gotten to a different gear where she like tells him to stop. Maybe there's a tremor in the force. Who knows? I don't know.
You guys are in Fantasy Island now.
It's also weird for me that Hunter didn't do anything for however long that was. Because Hunter's never been somebody who avoids confrontation. Hunter's okay with confrontation.
Yeah, that's like his language.
But all of a sudden, he doesn't want to talk to Crosshair. That's what kind of got me a little.
Yeah, you feel like he would have been yelling at him the entire time. Like confrontation is Hunter's love language. Mm-hmm. Like, come on.
Yep.
That's amazing. You guys suddenly are like, why isn't this show Andor? I looked at this and I was like, okay, it's like.
And then he pulls out his pistol and shoots him right
in the throat.
So that's the other thing is like, you're right, Ben, like it's an animated show, right? And it is punching above its weight for what it is, right? Yeah. And so I'm trying to like, let it go for that. But like, you then, I think about this now, having watched a lot of animated things for the past 3.5 years, of just like, you also have a section of this episode where your character in an anime show talks about like just cold-bloodedly like killing an Imperial officer. And I'm like, if you have that conversation, I cannot give you a pass because you're an animated show. Like, you were talking about things they don't even talk about in Star Wars, like a live action movie.
I know.
So like, come on.
I think there's a lot of things that they like expect you to just sort of know and understand and carry with you from like previous stuff. It's like, these guys are killers, man. That's what they do. They like come in, infiltrate, they murder, they do whatever they have to do to get the job done. And they've always done that. So it's like for them.
Wait,
it's
can
like,
we talk about that for a second?
Yeah.
So the Kaminoans put the chips in their heads. By the order of Darth Tyrannus, their client.
Well,
right?
Yeah.
So they're complicit.
Technically by the order of a Jedi Master whose name was Sifo Dyas.
Right. Yeah, Sifo Dyas. Yeah. But
that's what's on the paperwork on the tax returns.
But then Darth Tyrannus, the account sort of transfers to Darth Tyrannus.
No, right. Darth Tyrannus. So, it was just known to us that Tyrannus was controlling Sifo Dyas. But
so you just broke everything for me, Grant. So hold on. Oh man, why'd you have to ask that question? Let's talk about this for a second.
I just have to know where the Kaminoans stand, and just when we talk about Omega, this is important.
All right, so
Grant's trying to keep receipts here.
So who? Oh man, I don't even know. Like, I'm so broken now, I can't even ask. I don't even know how to begin asking this question. So, all right, so there's a chip in their head that says basically yes. There's a number of orders. We won't have to talk about
at
what
least
order
66.
1 through 65, but 66 is there's in your chip says kill all Jedis. Okay, so the question is. Here's my hope is that someone else, because now we have to explore this, program these chips and the Jedi Master handed it to the Kaminoans and said, put this in their brain. Do not look at what this says. Or
they 100% looked.
Or
there was no supervision. It was someone signed a purchase order and no one checked up until Obi-Wan accidentally found the place 12 years later.
Right. And so there was no question of just like, we'll just put this chip in their brains because you ordered it, which I mean, Kaminoans seem to be very like, they're very order friendly. Like, we don't ask questions. We just live up to it. So who wrote the chip? Was it? So then I guess the Geonosians? I'm just like trying here, people.
No, this will be content.
What do you mean?
This might be an accolade.
So the Kaminoans were like, I'm going to write a chip from a Jedi that says kill all Jedi.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Sure.
They're designed like all aloof and amoral, and it's just
not
like,
going to question no, why a
that's
Jedi.
That's why Omega has to be a Jedi.
They're credit-grubbing capitalists. Is what right. I've always got from them. And they're like, yeah, if that's what you want. That's like, what you get. We can do that.
They seem to be like this. These things we don't ask questions about funds our other research, which is Omega.
We saw in the last in Plagueis. You know, it's Legends, but like. Borderline, and like they had a Sith master being like, I need a killing force that's force repulsive, and they're like, gosh, let's work with that. What do we got? I love this idea. This is very good. Let's build on that. I don't know if this is the right species, but this lizards. Might be the right species. Like, there was no questioning that like Kaminoans are like, let's go. You want to make clones? Let's make clones.
They're in it for the science of the money.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it.
Yep. All right.
A whole species.
Fair enough. You have somewhat fixed it for me.
I'm just giving you the like my head is like never questioned that. I was like,
write it back up, and I'm not going to pick at that thread because everything will spill out suddenly. Also, we have no idea what the other orders are, right? Like that's I know that's like a timey joke, but like now I'm like Now I need a list of all the other orders.
One of them is like always fill the dishwasher back to front.
Yeah.
Nothing here, guys. All right, that's cool.
No, I was sorry.
I was trying to think of what Omega's, what the intent is behind Omega for the Kaminoans, given that she wasn't part of the purchase order we've been discussing.
They knew what they had, right? So she's not entirely a freak. Like, I feel like they made her for a reason and they got that out
and kept her close. And they, so they know.
Well, if all the Jedi were going to be destroyed and they made a Jedi, maybe they could make more Jedi, more Force sensitive, you know, clones. Maybe they were like, well, we could assume power in the galaxy because we have the only Force-sensitive fighting force.
Especially because they reiterate in this episode that she is older than...
Yeah, that was a funny bit.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It was cute. But, like, that means that they were on whatever track they were on. It was, like, pre when they saw things going south. Like, they were still in high development for... So, I don't know.
And then they decided to hide that? That she was had it carried it over an M count, a genetic M count from the Emperor.
I feel like
from,
she's more than just Tyrannus, like a water soluble that can convert, you know, convey M counts. Like I feel like maybe she has the Force, and they actually did it genetically. I don't know. It just seems more exciting than like, oh yes, you're a dilation principle that makes our equations for, you know, blood transfers to convey properly. Like, that just seems like a really weird thing to me.
Well, so maybe all of this, so this is what I do. Things break, and then I'm like, in my brain, I'm like trying to like overfix them. Because now I'm like, so they saw this chip, right? And so the chip's in there, and they're starting to look at it. Yeah, listen.
Chip, we're still the chip.
Follow me here.
I feel bad I brought up a new
You've broken me, but I think I'm fixing it.
No, we need to get this out. I've never heard this from you, Adam, so I want to know.
So
let's pull up the thread.
Listen to this. So they see this chip, and they're like, okay, so there's an order in there where they kill all the Jedi. So in this possibility, all the Jedi are dead. So we might be able to have a run on the market of Jedi.
Yes.
Right? Like so.
Yes,
wow, there you go.
This is exactly
supply and demand.
Galaxy. Yes.
So we make them I'm gonna use the water soluble Jedi line from Ben because
can't
that's
find
my favorite thing.
Sensitive, you destroy
right.
them all. Well, look at this new
look, we have the run on the market of Force sensitives or the ability to create Jedi again.
I'll be devil's advocate here because I still believe that this whole transferring of M count doesn't necessarily tie into the Force at all. I think it's almost like clones are just copies. When you make a copy of a copy, it gets diluted and it gets worse and it gets worse and it gets worse. I'm sure the M count is the only stable way to find out if it's a true copy or not. So if her M count, regardless of if it's 990 or some random number, stayed the same when she was cloned instead of degrading.
Okay.
That's
I like
how
that.
I
so because we talked
this.
About this, Jason, the other day in like the hallway, and I was like, so we're getting into the science, and you're like, yeah, I hope we get into the science, and this is what you mean is like,
yes,
okay,
yeah. So that's the first one to demonstrate that you can make a perfect copy
of a
copy. Okay, right. I like that a lot, and that would be something that they would be extremely interested in.
So basically, they would have to at that point reverse engineer how she was made, what process was used to make her in particular, to find out why she kept the same M count as Django.
Okay.
So you think Django had an inherent M count the exact same level as Omega, but all the clones didn't get it. Only Omega got his M count.
Exactly.
Like the perfect number, because like everyone, as we see in like episode one, right? Like everyone has an M count, right? Like it's something you can measure. It's measurable.
But some
and so,
people
yeah,
have zero
like
M count though, right?
I don't think anyone has a zero M count. I mean, maybe they do.
I mean, they say the Force is in all things, so isn't midichlorians just the manifestation of the Force in a sense?
And even Plo Koon says there's the Force in the clone troopers and stuff like that. Like the clone troopers have the Force too. They're living, you know.
That's
organisms.
A good point. I mean, that's also talking about the Force as far as like other than Lucino, like no one's touched midichlorians. So it, like he, that's guess, the one I have to go on is, and it's not even like real knowledge, but
no, but we've also, the M count phrase we've heard in The Mandalorian.
Yeah. There's
right?
like M machines and M count, and it's like a wink and a nod, but it's not like saying midichlorians.
I,
They don't want to say
they really don't.
It's, yeah, no, they're allergic they really to don't. It. They really, really, really don't. So, Jason, I guess my question back to you then is like, so I get why the Kaminoans are interested in that. Why is the Empire interested in that?
Because Palpatine wants to live forever, and if they're able to
perfect copy of Palpatine.
Exactly. Okay.
Got it. Okay, I liked it a lot. Yeah,
So that like actually could be a funny thing where it's like his son had the same M count but no force sensitivity.
Because if they could start making perfect copies of things, also think about like the worst case scenario where Palpatine makes an unaltered, completely like blank slate clone of Anakin and gets to raise Anakin
in his image. Yeah,
exactly like him,
and with all parts still attached.
Yep, and no sentimentality towards Padme, no sentimentality towards Luke and Leia later on down the line.
Oh.
No sentimentality towards anyone. It's literally just Palpatine and a perfect Anakin clone.
And Hayden Christensen somewhere is getting very, he's very like, excited.
Let's go.
There's a perfect Anakin clone walking around.
You think it's just to breed another apprentice, or you don't think it's for his own self-preservation?
I think it's both.
I brought you into this world. I'll take you out.
I feel like the essence transfer is kind of buried under all of this stuff we talk about all the time. And I'm like, you know, the dark side essence transfer, which Lucino talks about in the Plagueis book, and there it's in a lot of the ancillary books you can read up about sort of Sith alchemy and magic and stuff like that. And it's in there. And it's like that's always been the sort of quintessential component that I thought they sort of missed speaking out on in the sequels. I was like, this is something I think Palpatine had been planning a long time, is to sort of transfer his essence into a new body that retains the M count that can hold him. The only sort of vessel that I feel like could hold his restless sort of like Sith wraith is like something with a very high M count, you know, that rivals his own, essentially.
I mean, isn't that what was happening at the end of episode 9? Right? Like, the whole thing was using a transfer his essence into Rey.
Again, unclear. Yeah. But he said it, but it's like,
no, so what you're saying that sort of, wait, you're saying episode 9 wasn't entirely clear with what it was trying to do.
So, no, but it was also trying to sell you on that so late in the story.
It's like, oh boy.
But I didn't really know what that meant. It was like, does that mean that like Palpatine would be walking around in Daisy Ridley's body?
Exactly.
Or was he just like a spiritual, you know, essence transfer? Like,
I mean, if it's Palpatine, I think he would only do that if he was him, 100%
I think he would try to take over the body.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be happy with.
That's why I think the
like, and didn't think Palpatine could get grosser. And then I was like, yeah, that's grosser.
Yeah,
that's why I got the F3 is either also a Snoke or a Palpatine, like strand cast that they're looking at. I have to imagine. I mean, what did you think that was, Jason? That Hemlock and Palpatine are looking at.
Jeez, honestly, I kind of lean towards Dead Jedi, but it could also be Dead Clones.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's the reason they're actually taking all the clones to Tantus, is to get something from them.
Mm.
Yeah.
Or there's the Asajj theory going around too.
It could be tech.
Yeah.
I mean, Tech, much like Emery, would be a great expert to have around sort of the cloning
process. Well, he could be in there, especially because Tech is of interest, or at least the 99s might be of interest because they are like altered clones, right?
Mm.
I can't stop thinking about Matt Smith. I think it's got to be Matt Smith in there. Because it's like he's looking at it like his...
We were promised a Matt Smith. Gonna get a Matt
Smith.
Yeah,
no, I mean, but like, you know, whatever. Symbolic Matt Smith. Like, a young, like, as virile as possible Palpatine. Like, isn't that what he would want most?
If you bumped up against episode 9, go back and listen to our fan theories for episode 9. They're entirely a better experience than the film itself.
Right.
It all revolved around Matt Smith being young and like a
young Palpatine. Yeah,
I mean, that was what was gonna happen, right? Like, come on. And then they decided to go a different direction. But so, kind of looking ahead for a second, right? Like, we next week is a double episode.
Oh,
like, we're already back to a two-parter, and it's infiltration and extraction. And my question is, where are they infiltrating and what are they extracting?
I think they're going to find a base that has the coordinates for Tantus.
Yeah.
And they have to infiltrate the base, and then they have to extract the data.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess complete, what do they call it? Shaggy dog. Just like, they're going to go someplace random for a dumb reason, like Sid told them to, even though I know Sid's not their friend anymore. I think it's going to be a random side mission for two episodes. That's not actually going to have to, because like, it's 15 episodes. I know we're at like five, but I don't know. I hope they push the story forward, because that those are my favorite episodes. But that's the one kind of like bummer for me about this, is there's too many. They fight too many giant space monsters. And it was even like a meta experience in this episode.
I was going to say, to the point that one of the characters called it out. Why is there there always a giant monster? And I literally was thinking that five, four of like, there's always a monster. I know it's Star Wars, but enough already.
Which, I mean, the fact that he said that in an episode, maybe that means the rest of the season will be like story, which would be so great. And like actually pushing the dialogue forward for both like the, you know, galaxy. And
it is interesting.
Story, that, like, that would be fun.
I think what also adds to the fact that I think the rest of the season is going to be pushing story forward is the fact that this argument didn't go on longer and only resolved immediately. Yeah. Because now if it's resolved, then Hunter trusts Crosshair and they can go work on whatever is happening for the rest of the story for the remaining 10 episodes we have.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah, it's true. I think that's a good point. And it's like, we're a third of the way through the season already, right? And every single episode has been the mission, right? Like, there's not been a side mission yet. And they know this is the final season. They knew it was the final season. I don't know if they knew it was final. They knew it was the final season going into it. So it's like, it feels like they are very focused, which is often what you get in a final season of a series.
It's
right?
What I'd hope like, for, but you don't always get it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't know either. I don't have any answers to infiltration or extraction, but if you're going to promise me a two-parter that you're releasing on the same day, it's got to be something, right? Like, it can't just be this, like Ben, maybe it's a side mission, but I'm going to be, if I'm sitting down next Wednesday and I'm watching 45 minutes of the Bad Batch and it's just like, hey, we went to this town and got this thing, and I'm going to be like, really? This is what you're doing?
I mean,
this is what you're doing?
It's going to be entertaining. You know, I think back to like the racing episode from last season with Tech.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just to like flex on Tech, but it was fun.
Do you like this character? Do you like this character? You should like this character.
Do you like pod racing?
You should get attached to this character. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. He'll be fine.
We called that early too. It was like, oh man, you were like,
sure did.
Like, stop doing all this nice stuff for Tech. Like, you just knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
They played it a whole season.
I feel like if we're getting a side story, we're going to get Echo and Rex next week.
I was wondering, that's a good point. I was wondering, because they have to go, because they mentioned like, we don't have the coordinates, but we have a lot more data. So I wonder, which is like, that would be interesting if you're going to do like the Echo and Rex story and like how they find the coordinates of Tantus. Like, that would be, to me, a good use of a doubleheader, is like, tell those people, those clone stories.
Is Rex with like Gregor and Wolf and all them?
Maybe.
This point,
there was like Gregor and Fireball. I think Fireball might have died in a blaze of fire, probably.
Yeah.
There was a few there, but Gregor's in play for sure. I don't know about a Wolf, might have been on that trip too. So I looked up the ship that not Tech, sorry.
Oh, I love that show. The ship, the Echoes,
it's called the Remora.
I love that ship.
It's really cool because I'd forgotten about it, but it did show up. That was like their extraction ship, and Rex and Gregor and Fireball and another clone that I'm forgetting their name was also on that. And so we've seen that ship before, but it's a cool ship. It's a great design, designed for stealth and infiltration. The Remora. And so I wanted to say this actually before we get to, I forget. Whoever is managing the wiki pages for these episodes, chef's kiss. Like, it is amazing. It's through everything, the ships, the blasters, like, it's just like, it's amazing. Like, I've never been like, I really should donate to Wikipedia until I read this. And I was like looking for a credit. Like, shouldn't the person that managed, I mean, I guess many people manage the site, but like, I feel like they should get credited because who's ever it, like, I feel like Lucasfilm is now like running, like has someone that's running Wikipedia because it's great. And it's like all these hyperlinks and it goes all the stuff and the ships and the time periods are all right. And the planets are all there and the cities are all there. Like it's really cool. Sorry. I need to get that out.
Good stuff.
No, it is real interesting, right? In terms of like people just do it for their own whatever, right? Like it's not
allegedly, but like
I think I lied.
It's not illegal for a company to make Wikipedia entries, right?
No.
So why wouldn't they make sure that you know their Wikipedia entries are impeccable?
I don't know. But I just remember I think live on air it was just you and me, Ben, when like Garrett wasn't around, I live on air edited a Wikipedia page to add Therm Scissor Punch.
Nice.
Well, something. You know.
Like Therm Scissor Punch was in there. So occasionally
that's hilarious.
Right.
Do it for maybe it's all just all podcasters.
It's just, it's just podcasters mid podcast.
And another thing. Yeah.
Well, actually, it was Batcher who came to Crosshair's rescue.
Betcha.
Right on. Okay.
Until the podcast last week, I didn't know it was Batcher because I don't watch with subtitles. That's so I thought it was Betcha the entire time.
No,
Betcha.
Only subtitles.
Betcha.
Yeah.
I watch them. Like, they decide to go with the worm spelling of just like the, you know, the creature spelling, the W-Y-R-M.
Oh, yeah.
I appreciate that. When I saw that and those subtitles pop up, I'm like, oh, nice.
It was cool. It was like an ice worm, much like the sandworms of Dune. But it had a cool head. It had like horns and stuff. It
looked the creature design's amazing. I thought that was funny too. I was like, really? I'm like, are you trying to do an homage to Dune? Like, that's funny.
The week Dune comes out.
I know. It was whoever plotted that.
Pretty fun. I have to say, like the animation, it's amazing. It's spellbinding, but it, like now that like they've committed to this, like the way that they draws human faces, it's like now the faces stick out kind of alone. Everything else, like anyone in a helmet, it's like it's better than you're there. It's like super real. And so like everything looks fantastic, but then they're like, well, but we've decided to make these animated faces. So they're going to like this. Jenny had the comment, my wife had a comment that all of the women's boobs are like 1990s Laura Croft, is what she said.
Oh, no. That's amazing.
That's incredible.
And I'm like, okay yeah. That's... I'm like, you're not wrong. I'm like, wait. Oh, yeah. She's like, they're like triangles. And I'm like, okay.
Everything is very angular in the way they draw faces.
So. But yeah.
I guess I'll have to look for that next episode, which sounds super creepy. I guess I have no complaints.
I think it's the best animation I've ever seen, but I'm just making a note of like, it's like they've committed to like, are cartoons and not, you know, digital replications of everything except for their faces. And so now it's just sort of like, okay. But like when you see a sign of or a shot of like, it's, you know, golden hour and there's a line of, clones and they're all in their helmets and their armor and you're seeing other clones walk through this line of clones and into this brutalist building, like everything's immaculate, like it's incredible. You can see the scratch marks on the armor and the, you know, all the things is like so hyper detailed, and then it's just like you see their face and you're like, whoa, all right, now it's Minecraft.
It's because the skin is sort of doesn't have any texture to it. It's
like sort of porcelain smooth. They could do it, but it's like they've chose to have like the cheekbones with like literal lines for like the, you know, parts of the cheekbones. And I don't know. Anyways, I don't know why I'm so naggy tonight. I really
liked this art style. And I feel like I would love for them to make the whole data bank like that they built on the website, like entirely in this sort of like really refined Bad Batch art style, like you know, because Rebels it wasn't really, Clone Wars was, you know, they're really finding their footing. Rebels it looks a little better, and then Bad Batch has just perfected this specific art style. Even Clone Wars the season 7, I think, gorgeous art in that season. That sort of art, totally. If you kind of, I think if you take that broader and just do every character in that art style, and then when they are cast live action, it's just cool to kind of see that it's it's because the art style is a little exaggerated that we forgive a lot of the live action castings. I think it's just, it works perfectly if you kind of make the whole galaxy in that art style, and then you have all the live action.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like at this point it's so good that they're just like, well, it's a, we'd be losing money if we didn't use it, and like hence we've got Tales of the Jedi, and I bet there'll be something else after that. I mean, maybe not, unless, you know, Filoni's new job is taking up all his time. I mean, he's got a team, though. He could just, like, he could delegate a Clone Wars style animation.
I would love just, you know, the shows we're talking about, like the in between years with Luke, like between Empire and Return, or like, and after,
yeah, and The Mandalorian. Yeah.
That'd be great for animated to sort of explore, in my opinion.
Yeah, it would. It really would. I don't think we'd get it, but I mean, I feel like that would be the most fertile ground to do. Like, that would be the most fun to watch. Like, show me Luke Skywalker just like on a vision quest across the galaxy. Like, come on.
Just a few good years with R2, you know, just do Mando and Grogu, just Luke and R2, and just really,
that could be as popular as Mandalorian, right? Like, it's like, you know, and heck with it, get Mark Hamill to voice Luke Skywalker. Like, how hard is that? He would love to do that, and it would be great. And it would, like, and it would warm my heart every time I heard Mark Hamill speak. Like, let's go. Yeah. I just don't trust them to do that. It's like, it's a core character, and they're like, well, we don't know what we're going to do with comics here. And like, it, you know,
they got to start making choices.
And the choices should be like, let's just make the best Star Wars we can. And then we'll figure out the in-betweens and the connective tissue and whatever, you know. I don't know. Again, I'm not trying to be a negative Nancy tonight.
I was so rarely do we get a negative Ben. And I'm like,
I've got notes tonight for some reason. I've got notes, and I feel like people need to hear them for some reason.
They're also not the most controversial notes. Like,
I love Star Wars so much.
I think it's fine. I think we uncover a lot more interesting sort of content when we're at least challenging. Speaking somewhat critically on like what we liked, what we didn't like, you know, hopefully in equal measure, but sometimes it's good to explore everything.
I just hope that after Bad Batch is done, that they do another story driven animation.
Because
I feel like it's such a fun medium.
Yes.
And it's appealing to younger audiences and everyone else, and you can still do the lore bombs but still have a lot of fun. And I honestly have to say, like, I didn't start watching Bad Batch until I started listening to this part. Now I'm like all caught up, and honestly,
were we wrong?
Gets better and better, and of course not. You guys
the lighting,
that's now you're lying.
The music is good. That is wrong. The music is good.
The music's fine.
Trying to come back again at a later date. The music, like, let me flatter Ben, and I'll be back.
But I'm with you, Jason. Like, I always have to remind myself that the animated shows are worthwhile, and there's a lot of stuff there. And it's just, for some reason, I like my bias against animation sometimes, and I don't know why that is. I just kind of like forget about it, and then every season of the Bad Batch, it's just like, oh yeah, this is great. Like, there's so much good stuff here, and I'm with you. I'm like, I hope this isn't like, just keep doing the animated. Like, there should always be an animated show on
Jason.
I mean, if you're not sold in the first 5 minutes when that Imperial shuttle crashes on Tantus, like, if you're not sold by the animation in just that little sort of snippet, I don't know what to tell you. It's stuck.
Jason, give us I want to pitch for a new series, the next animated series by Disney, after you finish your comment. Sorry.
Honestly, I'll just jump to the question. Nice. I feel like the next animated series that they do has to be around a force sensitive character, a Jedi, and it has to be, I would honestly like to see it High Republic, because you're gonna expose more people to High Republic through animation than you will through the existing media right now. But you can tell so many cool stories in High Republic, or even Old Republic, or even something concurrent that's happening in the Mandoverse or something like that. Like, or even leading up to Rey's movie from end of...
Right, what happens next? Give us a Rey tale or a Finn tale or something.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I I really wonder what the Acolyte's going to do for the Old Republic, right? Or for the for the High Republic, I should say, in terms of I talk about this a lot with my wife, who's like loves Star Wars, but she's just like, I just dig on the shows and the movies, like that's it. Her like Ahsoka, like having like, I think we talked about this, like having to explain to her who Ahsoka was, right? Because if you only watch the movies and the shows, you're just like, she's like, I remember watching, she's watching, she's like, wait, Anakin had a Padawan?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh yes. Like, let's talk about it. Who like really enjoyed the show up until a certain point. We don't need to rehash Ahsoka. And like this idea of just like, she knows generally about the High Republic, but I'm so fascinated to watch her just like, what is this? Like, what is the higher? And I don't know how much they're going to talk about the High Republic, but like to be introduced to this. And so I think you're right, Jason. Like, we need the storytelling in animation and other mediums to draw people to the High Republic, because like, when you look at the numbers, like the book sales and the comics are nowhere near what the viewership is. Mm-hmm. It's a different medium. And like, it is such a fertile storytelling area that like, I think we need to introduce all Star Wars fans to. Like, there's a lot going on. So I love that idea of like a force sensitive, like weirdly, my 3-year-old knows more about the High Republic than my wife does because of like,
oh, the young Jedi. Yeah. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. No, mommy.
That's a great call, Jason. I love the High Republic era. I think that would be a really fun way for other audience members to jump in.
And just think of like all the cool force powers that you can show off in a time where the Jedi are at their peak.
Sure. I do know that the Acolyte is going to do the whole like bad guy's point of view, Jedi or the Empire essentially controlling the galaxy and putting up roadblocks to whatever the bad guys are up to. So I wonder, essentially maybe a Jedi within the Jedi ranks who kind of sees the flaws in the Jedi sort of authoritarianist sort of like approach to things. But I wonder what else you could explore there that has nothing to do with sort of whatever Acolyte rising in whatever sort of like secret Sith that exists at the time. I wonder what you could do in animation that's just Jedi stories. And if it's post Nile, if the Nile are taken care of at that point, what do you do as a threat? I do wonder. I wouldn't mind just Master Padawan stories, like really getting into the master and apprentice sort of relationship in a major way with two, maybe all new characters in the High Republic. And they tried to do that, I think, with Skeer and Bell Zedifar, right? Is that
Keeve Trennis?
Keeve Trennis, yeah. Keeve and
Skeer.
Skeer, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And Loden Greatstorm and Bell Zedifar, right? They try to do a little bit, but it kind of gets cut short, or like one's knighted right away. And obviously there's the Cataclysm, all this stuff that just pushes that, you know, pushes that storyline, you know, into light speed, and they just get over with the sort of master apprentice stuff quickly. I would love a show that actually just digs into that over and over and over and over and over again and sort of shows the tutelage.
Yeah.
That you're making me think a lot about Star Wars Visions, and most of those stories could just be like, those are canon, and they could be, and it wouldn't interrupt anything else. They're just good Star Wars stories that are being told, you know, through a different medium.
It's a giant galaxy.
It should be easy
with multiple millennia of storytelling, such as like, yes, they all happened. It's all true.
Yeah.
And the other thing is just like, it also reminds me of Tales of the Jedi and what I thought and hoped we were going to get with Tales of the Jedi. And we didn't. Is like, actually give me Tales of the Jedi. Right?
Give me some weird Jedi that did some awesome stuff.
The actual Golden Age of the Sith. Yeah. And
But like, just have like, Tales of the Jedi. Yeah. Well, the cartoon, just like, I want a, you know, just give me every standalone episode is just a different tale of a Jedi, right? Like,
oh, that's
just
great.
Give me a Plo Koon story.
Complexity of Jedi,
right? Yeah, but maybe I don't know. But I love all this.
Like, it doesn't need to be important. Better, like it really doesn't need to be important to like an overarching story. Just like give me a cool tale of a Jedi.
That's the thing, especially if you're hitting on like an important aspect of being a Jedi or showing something off about being a Jedi, is like that's great. Like that
also,
in and
like,
of itself
Jedi
is worthwhile.
Use the Force in different ways. Maybe a Jedi just paints all day and uses the Force to make art. Like, whatever. It can just be any sort of way that they use the Force that sort of is different or unique.
Yeah.
There's all that. All right. To explore.
I have one more deep question to ask you guys. And it might be too deep, and it's too hard for me because I can't think of an answer to it, but I'm going to ask you all because it'll be provocative or something. If you had to, so like you're making a new Star Wars and you have a Jedi in it and you want to expand the Jedi abilities, you know, your Jedi want, you want your Jedi to do something new.
Oh, wow. This is a big question.
Right?
Yeah.
What's the next, sure. like, you know, cause like Force Skyping, right? Like that was a new Jedi ability and came under some scrutiny, but like, what's your new Jedi Force ability that you do? Cause it like can't be too omnipotent, right? Like it can't just be like, well, I can part the seas, you know, I can't, you know, I can make everyone do what I want, or I can levitate the world. Like it's gotta be within reason. And so it's like, they're like small things that you use the Force to adjust that could help do it, you know, that would help you out, or, you know, it's gotta be a natural way to affect the environment.
I mean, I've written a few things that I feel like are interesting that I would love to see employed in a movie or something like that. I almost like Force invisibility, but in the way they do it, they basically hold up their hand and essentially just affect someone's mind from a distance and they can't see them, much like the cloak of invisibility in like Harry Potter, if you will, or whatever. But it's almost
pretty
like,
OP, man, but okay.
It's almost,
you know what I mean? Like, doesn't that seem like strong?
It's just so people can't see them and they're sweating while they're doing it. You know what I mean? It takes a lot of energy to do it, but I just, to me, that'd be an interesting thing.
That'd be a cool one.
See, this is the problem that I'm reading too many different fantasy and sci-fi things all at once. So
are you reading like Dune, like Robert Jordan, and like another fantasy and
Terry,
Tolkien,
Terry Pratchett. And Tolkien
and Terry Pratchett.
Braden Sanderson.
No, dude, you're gonna overload.
It's too many worlds. It's too many worlds.
It's too many worlds. Okay? Colliding. I feel like I'm going insane, but it's the only way I can do it because my attention cannot keep on one series.
That's amazing. I gotta bounce around. I'm the exact opposite of you.
I have to make my own spreadsheet.
Skimming and getting bored, where I'm just like, yeah, just get to the finale. But anyway, but like, because they all deal with the idea of being able to see the future in some way, right? And like the Wheel of Time has what's her name? Min. It's a short name. Min. I'm like, I got two of the three letters.
Yeah, you were there.
It was like Finn, Min, but it's Min.
You were confusing it with like, two other pieces of science fiction that you're reading currently.
I know, right? How did that happen? But like Min's big thing in Wheel of Time up until whatever, which is only up to book four, and what you see in the show is it's like when she sees someone's future above their head, it's kind of like destined. Yeah. It has to come true. Often it's misinterpreted of like what it means and when it's going to happen. But like another one, and this might be Dune, but sees like, no, it's not Dune, but sees possible futures, right? Like it's not meant to be true.
See that?
And like, and I thought there's something there with like a force sensitive, which again, they get visions, but to be able to see like potential outcomes for individuals, I think would be an interesting one, right? Because they're still dealt with this idea of like, this is a potential outcome. How do I actually steer them towards this or away from this without affecting it too much? Like, so it doesn't give them like certainty about it of just like, how do I intervene, right? And how do
I chime in on that quickly?
Please.
All right. Well, so having just seen Dune Part 2, and obviously in Part 1, Villeneuve does it as well, where he shows these sort of prophetic visions, but they're different paths that Paul can take in life, right? And even in the book, Frank Herbert expresses that each thing he does changes his path, you know, towards the emperor.
So more Garden of Forking Paths.
And ruling the galaxy and all those forking paths sort of stuff. It's very muddy in the Dune films. I would love if the Dawn of the Jedi film and Mangold finds a way to sort of do the paths and the prophetic visions in such a way that combines it with the advent of the Force and the Jedi and sort of like combines that sort of prophetic storytelling in a way that doesn't feel like in a kind of nuanced way that we haven't seen before that makes sense and things click into place late in the story but it all makes sense, but it's all threaded together very meticulously and almost less muddy than Dune and really explicitly pulling at the audience in each path that's presented to the audience and sort of really affecting paths, you know what I mean, that can be taken and sort of using those to manipulate the audience. Whereas in Dune, they're just these demarcated paths these you know, steps in a journey that you're like, okay, if he takes this person out, it means this towards getting the throne of power. It'd be more interesting if it's like, oh, it's because of this person dies and we're attached to this person, or this person, this you know, belief system is destroyed and we're connected to that belief system, or you know what, like it mm-hmm. really, really do it in an interesting way that actually is more affecting. That would be really cool. So I second that, Adam. I would love to see that in the live action storytelling in a fun way.
I think kind of in the same vein, what I would like to see a Jedi be able to do is almost like a limited precognition, where it's like a little more extending the moment, where maybe they see 2-3 seconds into the future, and it helps them affect the change of things immediately around them.
Yeah. I like that, because again, not too overpowered, right? It gives them an advantage. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. A kind of similar one to all these that is I think canon. I can't remember if it's been recanonized or not, but like it's Mace Windu's Shatterpoint ability, right? Which is very, Grant, this is for you. It's very Karnak from the Inhumans. But like basically you can see the
point. Wait, the Inhumans.
We just lost What's your that? Volume, buddy. Cut out.
Oh, you lost your
vocals. You're back.
Oh, wait, no, you're back.
Oh, yeah. It's the one comic I didn't collect, so that reference.
Oh, it's also collect that comic, the Karnak standalone from like 5 years ago is amazing.
Okay.
But like his mutant, we can't call him mutant, so we'll call him
an inhuman power. Yeah.
Basically being able to see the weak point of anything, right? And which is like Mace Windu in the book Shatterpoint, and I think they might have recanonized something. That's his like one Jedi specialty. He's like, he can see the weak point of almost anything and exploit it. So it's interesting to see that. I don't know if it's hard to do that.
I've heard it do visually, yeah, but it would be.
But visually, but
I have one too. It would just be a mute all. Like everyone you can see can't hear anything. It's mute all. It's just like everything's done.
Oh, that's great.
I that might be the one I would want. Yeah.
It's not really useful, like, but it's cool.
Confuse yeah. Ray.
It's just like when you just need quiet, just like mute all.
Yeah.
And yeah. And that's it. Well, anything else we missed this week? I feel like we got a lot of stuff out there, but there's a lot more. What didn't I ask you? Jason, what didn't we ask you this week?
Or any topics you want us to talk about?
Well, I feel like we covered most of it. I think there's a lot more Star Wars things that are still pretty prominent, like other like tabletop and card games and stuff. I know like Shatterpoint, which you just mentioned, is also a miniatures game that is a ton of fun, objective-based game. You make 2 squads, and it's a lot of fun. For a miniature game, it's kind of fast-paced. Like full game will take you maybe about 1.5-2 hours tops, which That's is fast compared to like Warhammer or something like that. But, you know, good way to spend an afternoon.
Gorgeous minifigs.
Yeah, I know like my local game store still does Star Wars Legion. I think there's another spot in the city that does X-Wing and Armada, which is like larger scale stuff. So, you know, Star Wars games are really popular out there, and if you look for them, you'll find homes to play them at.
That's awesome, man.
Very cool.
That's great. Yeah. It's good to know. Good to know they're thriving.
Well, we'll definitely have you back on to talk about the video games as well. I think Outlaws.
Let's go.
I imagine all of us picking that up. So we'll have you back on, Jason, for that one for sure.
Sounds good.
Coming April 2025.
Maybe we'll get you on before then too.
Yeah, you'll be able
to. Yeah, well. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, y'all. This was a blast. Jason, thanks so much for joining us this week.
Thank you, yeah, thanks for
great
having.
Great to have
me.
You
yeah,
on
thank you.
This side of the podcast for a change. And it's awesome. Next week we'll talk about more Bad Batch and some other things that we'll have to do with Star Wars.
Do you want me to just like say what we're going to talk about? Do you want me to just call it right now? Yeah, so why don't we talk about there's a 2-issue run in the Star Wars main comic. Why don't we talk about those? That's I don't have the issues in front of me because I wasn't planning on this, but I think it's like 25, 26, maybe something like that. But like it's the last 2 issues.
All right, and we'll Star Wars main run. So we'll do that. Awesome, can't wait to do it. It's a blast every week. Thanks very much for listening to us, and we'll talk to you next week. Settle up at the bar with us on
Cantina Chronicles.